Welcome everyone to episode 2. This is your host, Ryan Douglas. We're here to discuss your questions about sex and sexuality. Just wanted to thank everyone who downloaded last week's episode, and welcome to all of our new listeners this week. I know that we said last week was our inaugural podcast, but that was a little unfair since it was just really a teaser of what's to come. Even though it was a teaser, we did have 79 subscribers last week, so a big welcome to those guys. Some new and exciting things have taken off since our last podcast. As I mentioned last week, we were in the process of getting a new listener line for listener comments, and we're excited to now have that line available. So the number for that is area code 206-202-0197. Please be aware that long distance charges do apply for that, but we would love to hear from our listeners. Just leave a message for us and we'll try and get that on the air. Also, go ahead and ask your questions to that line as well. So again, that listener number is 206-202-0197. Also, again, we are located on myspace.com at myspace.com/taboo talk SLC. That's TABOOTALK SLC. You can also send us an email at taboo talk SLC@yahoo.com. Also, we've got a new setup for taking live calls during our podcast recording sessions. The information on how to join me live on air can be found at the MySpace site. Feel free to add us as a buddy, and then you can get our alerts through your MySpace bulletins when we've posted a new episode, if we're going to be doing any local shows, special shows, etc., special event type stuff. All right, with that out of the way, let's get to some of the questions that we got from last week. First, we had Jenny who asks, I get really wet when I have sex with my boyfriend, and I get really embarrassed about it. He really likes it, but it's really embarrassing for me. What can I do about it? Well, my answer to that is the wetness that you are experiencing could be caused by two different things. If you're a woman who's lucky enough to have multiple orgasms, chances are it's possible you could be having what's more commonly known as a female ejaculation, sometimes it's called squirting, which is caused by secretions in the glands in the vaginal area. Basically, through sexual stimulation, those glands get excited, they produce lots of fluid, and it can cause what's, you know, more commonly referred to as a female ejaculation or squirting. The more common cause, and what's more likely, is what's called orgasmic incontinence. Basically, that's exactly what it sounds. Most often it's seen in women who have had children or any kind of, you know, trauma or abuse to their genital area down there. And basically what it is it's actually you're urinating during sex. It's very common to have spasms down there, which cause, you know, the bladder to basically you wet yourself. So the spasming of those coccygeal muscles down there in that area can cause you to basically urinate during sex. Both the, you know, female ejaculation or orgasmic incontinence, they're not anything that you need to really worry about. And if your boyfriend's enjoying it, I definitely don't see it being a problem. But if it does bother you, I would recommend talking with your gynecologist or your family practitioner about it. They may have suggestions on if there's any medications or anything that you can take to control it. So thanks for your question, Jenny. Next, we had Michael. Michael is a gay man who's never bottomed before and wants to know a little bit of what to expect during anal intercourse. Well, I'm not going to lie about this one. If you're going to be having anal sex for the first time, there's going to be pain. It's just one of those things that you can't avoid. As long as you're with a partner that you trust, they're going to be willing to go a little more slower to make things easier for you. And that's really going to be the best option. You know, the slower that you're going and the more time you're taking to get used to those new feelings, the better off it's going to be for both of you. I know people that have tried bottoming, you know, with a one-night stand or, you know, just got in too much of a hurry and ended up in a lot of pain. You know, there can be tearing down there if you're not careful, you know, and really you want to make it the best experience that you can. Most of the time when you get hurt, you know, when bottoming, it's because the guy on top is too excited about, you know, the actual act and getting in there, and he gets in too much of a hurry to worry about what you're feeling. in either case, whether, you know, you go for the one night stand option or if it's with a partner that you've been with for a while and that you trust, you're going to want to make sure that you use a condom and lots of lubrication. You know, especially if it's a one night stand, you're definitely going to want to use protection. Just because there's a lot of nasty things that you can get if you're not careful. Also, the condom helps, you know, with the lubrication to keep things moving smoothly down there. I would recommend a silicone lubrication. Wet Platinum is an excellent one. Eros also has a platinum, or not a platinum, a silicone lubricant. And the reason that I say use the silicone is because they don't dry out as much as water-based lubricants. They are condom safe. So that's the nice thing about silicone. You're not going to want to use anything that's oil-based. I know the joke out there is, you know, use Crisco, but you're not going to want to do that just because the oils and the fats in those substances can actually break down latex, which can cause the condom to break. And also, you're not going to get as good a lubricant as you're wanting for your first time. So again, you're gonna want to be as liberal as you can with the lubricant. You know, don't hold back on it, especially if it's your first time. But I think any experienced bottom could also tell you that, you know, you're gonna want to use a lot of lubricant anyway. It's just gonna make it, you know, more pleasurable for both partners. You'll also probably want to be as relaxed as possible. So, you know, do whatever it needs to take for you to relax. You know, whether it be soft music playing in the background, candles, loud music, whatever. You know, a hot shower or bath is probably not a bad idea. Then you can also, you know, clean the area up, which also, you know, helps make for a more pleasurable and relaxing experience if you're not having to worry about, you know, smells or anything like that, because it's going to smell. You know, any sex that you get into, it's going to smell, you know, and that's part of the heat of the moment. But, you know, I do think the warm shower helps relax the muscles. You know, see if you can talk your partner into giving you a massage just to get you, you know, more relaxed. Now, I'd recommend that, you know, if this is your first time bottoming, that you basically take the top position, so to speak. What I mean by that is, you know, put yourself in the position that when your partner's entering you, you're the person that's on top. Have your partner lie down on his back and, you know, position yourself kneeling over, you know, his penis, and then lube up both his penis and your anus, and then basically what you do is you just sit down on top of it, and what that does is that puts you in control. You control how fast your partner's entering you, and so forth. Also, if your partner decides, you know, to get ahead of the game and thrust a little, you also have a little control as to being able to back up off of that. You know, and basically take it as your own pace. You know, if it starts to hurt, back off a little. You know, take your time. It's not going to be something that you're going to be able to do wham bam thank you ma'am kind of thing. What you're going to want to do, you know, is take your time with it. You know, make sure that you're comfortable. If you're not comfortable, don't do it. You know, your partner's not going to care, especially if they're somebody that you care about and that cares about you. It's not worth trying to be the champion the first time and hurting later, because it will hurt later. And ultimately, you're going to come down to not liking, you know, anal sex at all, which is fine. Some gay men don't prefer anal sex, you know, even for women. You know, if the woman is wanting to try anal sex, you know, you're not going to want to push them away from that if it's an unpleasant experience, because it can be a very pleasant experience. But I think that if you take the time to accustom yourself to the new feelings and sensations, it's going to be a lot more pleasurable for both you and your partner. You know, and ultimately, it'll be a good experience for the both of you. Moving on, next we have Brian. Brian actually heard about a new gel on a radio broadcast that he said would kill the HIV virus. Now, I believe I know what the gel that Brian is talking about. However, it does not kill the virus that causes HIV infection. It's important to remember that, you know, if there were some type of miracle cure out there to kill HIV virus, you know, they would definitely be doing what they can to push it through the Food and Drug Administration to get it approved. this last year at the 2006 Microbicide Conference in South Africa, they actually talked about a new topical ointment or gel that would actually prevent the transmission of HIV through vaginal walls during vaginal intercourse. Basically, in the clinical trials that they are doing, they're actually testing it only in heterosexual couples. So we're talking penis and vagina insertion. Basically, what they've found is that in a lot of the cases, this gel actually blocks the protein that HIV uses to, you know, attach itself to the immune system. The ointment is, you know, probably still a few years off. They have begun clinical trials in South Africa, and I know that they're looking to begin, you know, trials within the next year in the U.S. One of the problems that they've come into with this gel is it actually causes a lot of irritation in the vaginal canal and the ointments, and they can upset the natural balance of the organisms in the vaginal canal. You know, there's a lot of, you know, any woman can tell you that there are a lot of natural pathogens down in that area. And, you know, antibiotics that they may be taking for a cold, a lot of that stuff can cause, you know, these severe yeast infections. Even, you know, just regular sexual intercourse can cause yeast infections. So that's one of the things that they're coming into, is that, you know, it's causing a lot of irritation down in that area. So that's one of the concerns that the Food and Drug Administration is looking at. With some of the newer gels and treatments that they've come out with, they've kind of been able to find a gel that doesn't cause that vaginal irritation. But again, that's only been, they're only trying it in female-male intercourse. And again, it doesn't really protect, you know, the male. If the female has, you know, HIV, they do run the risk of passing that on to the man if there's any cuts in the penis, so on and so forth. The gel works by, again, essentially blocking the protein that the virus uses to attach itself to the immune system, in which case the virus would actually be flushed out of the body during urination, etc., you know, just washing, that kind of thing. So the gel would not cure current HIV infection, but it does be able to prevent its transmission, and is, you know, definitely one of the major goals that, you know, the World Health Organization, you know, actually the United Nations is actually funding some of this too, just because, you know, in South Africa and those African third world countries, HIV transmission is one of those huge issues down there, especially in women, because they don't have the resources to be able to have, you know, protected sex. Condoms aren't readily available down there. So again, you know, like I said, it doesn't cure HIV, but it does help, you know, prevent transmission. It's also important to remember that although, you know, HIV is not the only HIV is not the only concern that people should be having when engaging in unprotected sex. You know, there are other diseases out there, genital warts, herpes, syphilis, you know, that you need to be concerned about. Genital warts actually is making quite a few headlines in the news lately. In the next month or so, they're actually, the Food and Drug Administration should be approving a new vaccine for human papillomavirus, which is actually the virus that causes genital warts, and they've also been able to show that it can cause cervical cancer as well. So that's one of the things that, you know, I really recommend, once that vaccine comes out, that everyone who is engaging in sexual activity, you know, go out and get the vaccine. They haven't done too many clinical trials in men, but they will be making the vaccine available to men when that does come out. So, you know, definitely go out and, you know, take the steps to protect yourself. You know, again, we really do stress that anytime you engage, you know, in any sexual contact, that you do take precautions. You know, if you're in a lesbian relationship, there's dental dams, there's all sorts of products out there on the line. Of course, there's condoms. You know, just take those steps to make sure that you're protecting yourself and ultimately protecting your partner. You know, even if you're in a monogamous partnership, you know, for one, it makes cleanup a lot easier, you know. So safe sex should definitely be something that you and your partner are discussing. So on that note, we're going to take a little break here, and we'll be right back. All right, and welcome back. Sorry about that little break there. We are going to change things up a little bit. We do have a product review. I've heard a lot of stuff, and you may have heard some of the stuff on other podcasts. Recently, Dallas Gay Pod, one of my favorite podcasts, just talked about it. And it's actually called the Aneros Prostate Massager. And there have been a lot of questions about it. I've actually gotten a couple questions from viewers about it, or from listeners about it. It actually is a sexual toy that, it's basically an anal sphincter assisted prostate simulator that basically the manufacturers claim that it can give unsurpassed, male orgasms that they call superos. The Aneros, just reading on their website here, it was featured in Details, Time Out New York, Playgirl, Nerve.com, and actually it was on the Sunday Night Sex Show with Sue Johansson, Johansson, which is actually one of my favorite shows if you ever get a chance to watch it. It was actually rated one of the top 10 toys of 2003. It was actually... And it's kind of an interesting looking toy. Just, looking at it, it's kind of curly and funny shaped, and you kind of wonder how it works. But actually, just from what I've been able to see, if you want to check it out yourself, it's www.aneros, which is aneros.com. And that's actually where you can read more about it, read how it works, and so forth, and also purchase the product. It's actually pretty decently priced, for a sex toy, in what I think. They're basic, Aneros prostate massager. It starts at $48, and then they go all the way up. They've got several kits that contain several different sizes and so forth that go all the way up to $125. But basically how it works is you lubricate the actual massager and you insert it into your anus, and then there's actually a curlicue that comes down and pushes on an acupressure point. Basically they call it the prostate point, located between the anus and the genitals. So basically what you're supposed to do is you put this massager in there with a lot of lubrication. They say to be quite liberal with the lubrication, just because it allows it to move more freely within the rectum. And then basically what you do is once you've got it all adjusted, you kind of contract your rectum, and it causes the massager to become unstable inside your anus. And so with all that lubrication in there, it causes it to move around and wiggle around and cause all sorts of, wonderful sensations and feelings up there. There's been some debate out there as to whether or not, prostate stimulation does anything. A lot of women's magazines call it the male G-spot. Whether it's fact or myth, that's up to you. It's, there's debate as to whether or not there's, a female G-spot as well. But it's definitely a toy that, I would definitely be interested in, so... definitely go to the website, check things out. It is, a unique looking toy, but if any of the listeners out there have tried one of these, or know somebody that has tried one of these, we'd love to get you to call into our viewer line or send us some emails, post some stuff on MySpace, let us know what you think about it, because it's definitely something that, strikes interest in a lot of our listeners, I think. So that's going to be our review for the day. All right, so let's get back to our questions. Next, we have Shelly. Shelly says that her girlfriend is interested in inviting another person into their relationship and wants to know if I have any advice on that. She says that she's a little uncomfortable about the idea. My thoughts on this are that, if you're uncomfortable with your partner wanting to bring somebody else into the relationship, I think that's something that you need to talk about. Also, I would probably question the reasons why you're wanting to bring someone else into the relationship. I think it's perfectly healthy if you're in a secure relationship to invite somebody else into the bedroom on that level. But again, you have to be secure with your relationship. If this is just a new relationship that's starting out, I probably wouldn't recommend it. The reason for that is, again, it's a new relationship. You're not going to want to be, opening a can of worms, right at the beginning. of this relationship, only to have, you know, feelings of jealousy, of guilt, of that kind of stuff, you know, play into it. Now, if it's a longer-term relationship and you're looking for something, you know, to spice things up in the bedroom, you know, again, I would still take caution with it, but I think that it's something that's perfectly normal and perfectly healthy. Again, I would also stress to make sure that you're using protection, you know, in any activity that you're participating in sexually, because you're going to want to protect yourself and your partner as well as whoever it is that you're bringing into the relationship. Now, my question for Shelley would be, is this somebody that you both have known for a while, or is this, you know, somebody that was, you know, picked up online, met at a bar, that kind of thing? Because I think that if you're going to bring somebody into your relationship, it probably should be, you know, somebody that you trust, but I don't think it's going to want to be somebody that you associate with, you know, on a regular basis, unless you're planning on this being, you know, long-term kind of thing. And the reason for that is, you know, a lot of times I see that when couples want to do something like this, they're wanting it to be short-term. You know, if it ends up being long-term, you know, that does work out, but I think for the most part, people are wanting it to be, you know, a short-term type of deal. Again, Shelley, I would recommend that, you know, if you are uncomfortable with this, sit down and discuss with your partner the reasons that you're uncomfortable with it. You know, find out why they are wanting somebody to come into the relationship. You know, and it's something that ultimately you're going to have to sit down and decide, is this the way that we want this relationship to continue? You know, if it's a new relationship, there's got to be underlying reasons why your partner is wanting to bring somebody else into this relationship. So I definitely would take a look at that. Next we have Nick. Nick thinks that he's addicted to pornography and wants to know what to do. Depending on how much pornography you're watching, that kind of thing, I don't think it's going to be that big of a problem. I think as with anything, though, there can be the nature for addiction there. Addiction exists in, you know, all sorts of different forms, you know, and chances are typically what's been seen in clinical studies is that people who are addicted to pornography and that type of thing, there's also some other underlying addiction there, whether it be alcohol and drug abuse, sex addiction, that kind of thing. So I would definitely take a look and see, you know, if you're addicted to some of those other things, maybe you want to address those other things before you go into the pornography addiction. Just because I don't think pornography is necessarily, I mean, if you're looking at it at work, yeah, that's going to be a problem. But if it's just at your home, you know, in the privacy of your own person, in your relationship, I don't think that that's going to be a problem. But, you know, definitely look and see, are those other addictions there? And I think those other addictions are what's going to be, you know, underlying reason for this pornography addiction. So get into some kind of a program, a 12-step program, whether it be substance abuse, you know, sex addicts, Narcotics Anonymous. Get into one of those programs, get a sponsor, go out there and make sure that, you know, you're getting this problem taken care of. If it's just the pornography issue, you know, cut it back to, you know, one night, two nights a week, you know, and just make sure that you're not engaging in viewing pornography in a situation that's going to get you in trouble for it. If you do end up getting in that type of a situation, or you feel that it's headed in that direction, definitely go and talk to somebody about it. Your family practitioner is an excellent resource, and I recommend that any question that you've got relating to your health, whether it be physical, mental, sexual, talk to your family practitioner about it. They may not necessarily be able to assist you with the problem, but they can definitely provide you with referrals. That's why they're in family practice and general practice, is to be able to take the first step towards, you know, looking at those problems and provide you direction as to where to go. So definitely talk to your family practitioner about it if you feel that it's a problem. You don't even have to say that it's a pornography problem. Ask if they've got a referral for a good, you know, addiction specialist, and that kind of thing, and they can provide you an excellent resource for that. And then work with that therapist and, you know, diligently make sure that you're attending, you know, your sessions with that therapist, work in the steps that they give you to work with that addiction, because ultimately any addiction can lead to a problem. So that's kind of my advice to you, Nick. If you want to send me another email, with your location, I can probably look up and find some referrals for addiction therapists in your area and so forth. So definitely keep us posted on what's going on there. Next, we have Rachel. Rachel's problem is that she can't have an orgasm during sex with her boyfriend. This is not uncommon for a lot of women out there, and Rachel, I do want to make sure that you know that chances are 40% of the women who are having sex have orgasm from sexual intercourse. It's not common for a woman to have an orgasm during sexual intercourse. So it doesn't make anything wrong with you. There's not, you know, problems that are going on. Most of the time, when a woman has an orgasm, it's either from manual stimulation with the fingers or a toy or, you know, that kind of thing, or with oral sex. Another thing that I would also ask you is, are you a woman that has multiple orgasms? If you're not a woman that has multiple orgasms, again, that's not something that's uncommon. You know, 60% of women out there only have orgasms with oral or manual stimulation. Sexual intercourse is just not going to do it. Just because of the way that the anatomy works, things don't often line up so that it causes the stimulation. Because what a lot of women don't understand is that an orgasm is not caused by stimulation of the vaginal canal. It's actually caused by stimulation of the clitoris, which, you know, if you've ever looked at your anatomy down there, the clitoris is out of the way, and it's not going to be something that the penis would normally come in contact with. So again, if you're not having an orgasm during sex with your boyfriend, it's not because there's something wrong with your boyfriend. It's not because there's something wrong with you. It's just that the anatomy doesn't work down there so that regular intercourse will cause that nerve stimulation that ultimately leads to the orgasmic response. So that's what we've got there. Okay, next we have Glenn. And Glenn is interested in BDSM but doesn't know where or how to find out reliable information or people to trust on this. Well, I'm glad Glenn came to me with this. The internet has a lot of resources, and being able to find true reliable resources can actually be a huge challenge. A couple of years ago, I actually wrote a paper about BDSM, and we actually had to use only internet resources. So it was very different than being able to find the information in a journal of sexuality, you know, something from the Journal of American Medicine or so forth, that we know to be a reliable resource. One of the websites that I really rely on for a lot of good information is sexuality.org. You can locate them on the web. You can do a Google search for sexuality.org, or you can just type in sexuality.org, and they are a great resource for anything related to sex and sexuality. And I definitely encourage anyone out there who listens to the podcast, don't take my answer as, you know, the word and the final word on everything. Go out there, do the research yourself, see what you can find, because there's a lot of opinion out there about sex and sexuality that we don't know about. I don't know if any of you have seen the movie Kinsey, but one of the things that Alfred Kinsey worked with was, you know, back in the time where it was very, very taboo to mention sex, you know, much less talk about it on, you know, any type of broadcast media, he really struggled with being able to find reliable information out there. So I definitely, you know, hear where Glenn's coming from on this, on being able to find reliable information, especially about something that's, you know, even today, in today's world of sex and sexuality, is still taboo, which is BDSM. For those of you out there who don't know, BDSM is bondage, domination, and sadomasochism. And there's a lot of stigma that's tied to something like this. So I can understand why Glenn wouldn't want to, you know, talk to his friends about this and that sort of thing. One of the things that I would recommend is get involved with an internet group, Yahoo groups, something like that. Just do a search for BDSM out there. I guarantee there are probably thousands, if not millions, of groups out there devoted to bondage and domination. A lot of them aren't necessarily going to be gay or straight, so, you know, just get involved with a couple of them, read their posts, talk to the members, because the members on there, this is their fetish, their passion for a lot of them. So they're going to have a lot of reliable information. They're going to tell you how they got started into it and so forth. So it's a great way to network. You can meet some great friends from doing it. I know that here in the Salt Lake area, there's a Utah Leatherman on Yahoo groups that they get together. You know, they try and get together once a month to do barbecues and that sort of thing. So definitely start with Yahoo, look for groups on there, see which ones have the most members, which have the type of stuff that you're interested in, and get involved that way. Also, there's a great book out there that I was actually just reading about. You can get it on Amazon.com. It's called Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns, The Romance and Sexual Sorcery of Sadomasochism. It's actually by Philip Miller and Molly Devon. Like I said, you can get it on Amazon.com, so it is in trade paper. They're showing the price on here is $29.99. And just from the reviews that they've got on here, you know, it's clear, concise explanations, you know, for the beginner to bondage and, you know, sadomasochism. It's illustrated so that if there's any question about what they're discussing, you can look to, you know, those resources there. You know, it covers all of the basics, you know, even some of the not so basics of bondage. Talks about the endorphins, the chemical responses that the body feels during it, toys, the S&M community, you know, basically everything that's out there. It's a good general, you know, book on the subject. If you do want to get the ISBN information and everything, you can send me an email and I'd be more than happy to send that information to you. But again, you can just do a title search on Amazon.com. And then the name of that book is Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns, The Romance of Sexual Sorcery and Sexual Sorcery of Sadomasochism. So that would definitely be a great book out there. And again, just, you know, as with anything, you know, fetish-wise, if you're getting into something or even in just your regular sexual practices, just take a little caution, you know, when you do get involved with something like that. You're going to want to be sure that, you know, before you do anything, that, you know, you basically set up boundaries for yourself, set up limits. In the BDSM community, they do deal heavily with, you know, basically the use of a safe word, making sure that, you know, the limits are clearly set forth before they even begin some type of a session. So just be sure that it's with somebody that you trust. You know, go to some of the events if they have local events in your areas. Get involved with the clubs. Chat online with these people, because that's going to be how you learn more about the community, and really that's going to be the more reliable information, to be able to get it firsthand from people who are in the community and who embrace that fetish. You know, with any fetish, I would definitely recommend getting involved in a community. Obviously, there's going to be some fetishes out there that, you know, aren't real healthy fetishes to get into, but we won't even discuss that right now. So, excellent question for Glenn. I think that just about wraps up all the questions that we had today, so it is going to be a little bit shorter podcast, but definitely give you something to, you know, listen to, more substantial than our last podcast. Again, this is Ryan Douglas at TabooTalkSLC@yahoo.com. Also look us up on MySpace.com. I'm going to reread some of our numbers from earlier so that you've got those. We do have our new listener line, which is 206-202-0197. Again, that's our listener line, 206-202-0197. So go ahead and give us a call. Let us know what you think of the show. We're always looking for feedback. I am still looking for a co-host, so those of you out there who are interested in the show, like the information that you're getting, you know, want to become a part of this, definitely let me know. Also, we love to have researchers, so if there's anyone out there who wants to get some research information on there or has topics that they've already researched that they want discussed, send those to us. Any ideas that we can get for the show are fantastic. If you've got recommendations for products, books, websites, etc., let us know. So I've really enjoyed having you here for the last half hour. Welcome again to all of our new listeners, and thanks for tuning back in to all of our old listeners. Feel free to send us your comments through MySpace, TabooTalkSLC, or TabooTalkSLC@yahoo.com. Until then, everyone be safe and be well.